You are about to enter the Ghostly Archives.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Ghostly Archives. I'm on so many podcasts that sometimes I forget what show I'm doing. I almost forgot. We're on Ghostly Archives tonight, and I have a wonderful guest, Darkay Shade. She's going to come and talk about her books. She has a few amazing collections she's been writing since she was very young. Her father has actually been on my show, Ed Schultz, talking about the Warrens and ghosts. So we could go all over the place. We could start talking about her books. We could end up talking about ghost hunting and all of our interests. So I hope you guys join us and stick around. And remember, before you go anywhere, before you take off, remember to repost this episode on X, share on YouTube, share across your social media platforms. Obviously, pop a heart, thumbs up. If you're listening to this on the audio podcast, across iTunes or, you know, Stitcher, or all those platforms, remember to give us 5-star ratings, for it helps me show up in those charts, especially iTunes. Give us a good 5-star ratings. That would be fantastic. Now, I'm going to do a little bit of a housekeeping here because I've been away for a few days. It was my birthday on Saturday. We had this amazing experience. Me and my husband went to a silent movie theater. They show these silent movies, and they actually have an organ from the 1920s. So it's like literally like you're in the 1920s, and they're playing the organ that they would have played in silent movies in those days. They've got all like special effects, the sound effects up in, you know, almost like little surround sound. And it was so cool and different. I had never done that before. So it was cool. And they do it up in Salt Lake City, I think. And it's quite fun. It was quite fun, so I recommend it. Now, we've got some really cool shows coming up. Tomorrow I'm going to talk politics. I need to do a politics show. That'll be on Gen X News. You join me on X and Rumble. But Thursday I have 2 shows going on. Thursday I have Micah Dank returning for part 2 of his biblical Decoding the Bible. That's going to be at 6 p.m. Eastern. And then we've got the Beast System show happening at 10 p.m. Eastern, and we are talking about the Nephilim and clowns. Are clowns some kind of depiction of the Nephilim? Well, there's some conspiracy theories out there that think so. So be sure to watch this channel, the X channel, especially on Thursday, because we're going to have some really cool shows going out. Give you guys a few, it usually takes you guys a little while to stream in. There's not very many of you yet. Usually there's quite a bit more. Maybe everybody's really busy on X. Maybe it's a crazy politic night. I don't know what's going on. But yeah, we'll give you guys some time to stream in. It looks like we got a few people here on YouTube. Don't forget, guys, thumbs up on YouTube, repost and a heart on X, thumbs up on Rumble if you're listening there, sharing. You know, every little bit that you can support your friends or anyone that does podcasts helps them out. And there's tons of big shows. They don't need your support. We need your support here at this show. So I really appreciate it. All right. So let's get to the point of the show and get my guests on here. Let's bring in Darkay Shade. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you here. Your dad's been on. We had some great conversations. We also did remote viewing, and I don't know how good I was. I think I might have been meh. But you are here talking about your writing and a lot of fictional. I know we were talking about the vampires and fairies. Do you want to just tell everybody, give them a little background about yourself and writing and how you became a writer?
Sure. I got the writing bug in the first grade. We ended up having the library there at the school had this Be Your Own Author week. So what they would do is they would have us write little stories, and then they would teach us how to bind the books, and then they would put them in the library afterwards. And I was the only one that wrote two books that week. I wrote Rudolph's Hard Time, and then I wrote one called Valley of the Unicorns. And I believe my brother wrote The Pac-Man That Ate Philadelphia, and I was a teenage Pac-Man. He was obsessed with Pac-Man at the time. But I couldn't stop writing at that point. I keep having little movies go through my head, and they'll go on repeat until I actually write them down, and then they'll stop. So I'm constantly 24/7 have these little movies running through my head that I have to get down on paper.
Wow. And were you always interested in like the sort of sci-fi or more fantasy-based storylines?
Definitely fantasy-based and horror-based. I could never really get into sci-fi. It was too much technology for me. I'd much rather think about riding Falcor through the clouds. I prefer dragons, vampires, werewolves, fairies. I don't know. My brother's the big Star Wars geek, so I tend to stay away from sci-fi.
Okay, fantasy. Yeah, I love Star Wars, but it's like original trilogy, the stuff that's out today. I don't know what's happening to the writing and what's going on, but they seem to be confused about their narratives.
Yeah, I think they're taking away, because the original trilogy was written in a fairy tale motif. And I think they've kind of shied away from that, and they're trying new styles of writing, and it's just not working.
Well, do you know what it feels like? It feels like they just went to fanfiction.net and picked some writers and were like, hey, let's just write away. And it's like, well, archetypes are important.
Yeah, absolutely. Now it just seems to be like a Star Wars soap opera.
Mm. Oh my God, totally. It does it like they don't even know, like they have so many narratives running. They don't even know. Like Dark Shadows would get like that, where the writers were writing so many narratives and so many stuff, they would forget. Yeah, they get lost in their own narratives.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you find that's like easy to do? Like as a writer, do you find that sometimes you can get lost in narratives like that?
I used to, but nowadays I've found a way to make it very cohesive. I use index cards mostly. And what I'll do is I'll write down what the chapter has that are key points that I need to remember because it's going to be continued in a different story. And that way I can go back and check them at all times. My friends laugh and say I'm the most organized writer they've ever met.
Yeah, but it's good because you want a solid narrative.
Oh, absolutely. You're the leader. You don't want someone coming back to you and saying, oh, you forgot about this plot line, whatever happened with it. You want to be able to give them the closure that they need.
Right. So I've never written a book. I don't even know if I could. Do you like have like when you're writing a book, is there a number of storylines like maximum? Do you plan that? Like, is there like a magical?
I wish. A lot of times I'm working on 6 or 7 books at the same time. And strangely, I never get them mixed up. But I'll do like maybe 3 chapters of one book, and then I'll stop and I'll go and do 2 more chapters of a different book. And maybe the next weekend I'll do a different set of books. So I just keep them all going. I mean, all my stories, even though they have different characters and everything, they all come together in the end. They're all related or in the same universe.
Excellent. Well, that's great. Now, about the series that you're talking about with the Fae, what made you interested in fairies or Fae lore? And yours is like totally unique. Mm-hmm. You kind of combine it with other elements, right?
Oh, absolutely. I've been obsessed with the supernatural and fairies since I was little. I think a lot of it had to do with the late 70s and early 80s had a lot of fantasy on TV and in movies. So I think because of that, I became fascinated with it. And when I was in high school, I just studied it. I studied the Irish folklore about fairies, the Scottish folklore. Some Romanian ones are really, really interesting. So I've done all sorts of mythology, and I couldn't get enough of it. And I think because of that, the little movies in my head started showing me different types of fairies that I didn't know existed. So I almost feel like I can't take credit for my own writing because I don't know where it comes from. It just all comes out.
It's like, it's almost channeled.
Absolutely. I tell a lot of people that. I'm like, I'll sit down at the computer and all of a sudden it's 3 hours later and I've got 60 or 70 pages and I have no idea what I've written. And I have to go back and read it afterwards to find out what I wrote.
That is, I mean, that's how a lot of creativity happens, where you just get into this. I can't explain it because sometimes it happens when I'm doing graphic design stuff.
It's like a trance.
You just get into this like flow of energy and you just go with it and you can't stop. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I always had the problem where I couldn't, where I'd be like, the flow's not coming right now. I got to go do something else until it comes.
Yep.
I thought like writer's block, right?
I wish I had that problem. I've never had writer's block, but I've also have the problem that I can only write on the weekends because my life is way too hectic during the week, but the movies don't stop. So 24/7, I'll see the same scenes over and over and over and over until Saturday comes when I can get up early and write.
What were your favorite movies that inspired you? Like you talked about fantasy movies. I had a few that I really liked in the 80s, but what were your favorites?
Definitely The Neverending Story, Labyrinth, Dark Crystal. My favorite all-time movie is Watership Down. I know it's not fantasy, but I think that's what started getting me into the idea of animals as characters. And let's see, Labyrinth is a huge one for me.
Did you ever see the movie Legend with Tim Curry and Tom Cruise?
Yes. I'm not a Tom Cruise fan, but I do love that movie. There's actually two versions of it that I've seen.
Yes. Yeah. There's the European and the American one.
There's a director's cut too, which confused me because it doesn't have the scene at the end where they put the horn back on the unicorn. They just kind of phase right over that. And I thought that was a pivotal part of the movie. So that really confused me.
Yeah, I think, you know, he went through some interesting stuff. Ridley Scott, he freaked out. He butchered that movie all up. And then they had an original, European version with a classical score, and then they freaked out and went totally the Tangerine Dream, and then hacked it up so that things didn't. I mean, I enjoyed the American one, was the one I saw originally when I was young, but then when I seen the European one, I was like, oh yeah, it kind of makes a little bit more narrative sense.
Yeah, it definitely fills in some of the blanks that you're questioning about.
Yeah,
I do love Lord of the Rings.
Okay, good. Lord of the Rings is a good one. That's more of like in the early 2000s, but
I watched the animated ones back in the day.
Oh, that's right. 77 had the animated one. Like the, was it The Hobbit or was it Lord of the Rings?
It was The Hobbit, but they also had the Lord of the Rings because I remember watching, I think it was Return of the King, because Frodo was always my favorite character because of the animated series. And I remember the orcs had a song where there's a whip, there's a way. And I think I got in trouble in school because I used to sing that all the time.
So in your novels that you have, and I've got some links up at the top of the chat where her books are, but if you guys go to Amazon and type in Dark A Shade, you should be able to find them. You might have to search a little bit. I'm going to pop up, but you should be able to find them. But when you're going into your novels, what's unique? What are you doing with fairies that is different from, like, what's your angle, I guess?
I think the angle is in the beginning, it's the darkness and the light, and they're actually lovers, and they're creating things together. And then there's a collective powers that be that steal the light and decide to start creating things. But their first creation is called Spirito Santo. He's an elemental. And he controls all spirit. And he starts seeing what they're doing. So he starts trying within the different breeds to make ways to fix what happened. And so all the different supernatural creatures of the world all come from these original five elementals.
Wow. And so are the villains, they're the ones who steal the light?
The villains originated from something called, I call it the Nothing, probably part of because of the Neverending Story. But the Nothing was the negative space between the light and the dark that was jealous of the light and dark. So it created the powers that be in order to try to become the light and dark. It craved so much what they had that it tried to steal it. And so all the evil creatures start coming from the nothing and from the one power that be that's known as Enoch.
Well, that's really interesting because usually people pose the darkness as the evil whatever, yep, and the light as
not
the good.
My series at all.
And you've got that. That's really fascinating. You have that as the balance, and there's almost like this empty void nothingness that is like,
mm-hmm, and
third
of course,
party. That's really different.
When the nothing steals the light, the darkness is embracing her. So she takes her his arms with her, and they don't realize that. They think that they've left the dark and just taken the light. But because she took that little slice of him, he's able to get a form too. And the whole series is pretty much darkness and light trying to get back to each other.
Balance in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's like yin and yang.
Absolutely.
That's it. Like, that's what was going through my head when you said the dark and light.
Not Enoch from the Bible.
No. So Emily wants to also know is, do you believe that fairies are real or mythological or a combination or?
I do believe that they're real. I believe they're interdimensional, and that's why we can't find any proof of them, is because, they're always saying like fairy rings and fairy doors that they'll take you into their world, but they're very seldom ever in our world. And I am a firm believer in that.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people have that theory that fairies abductions and UFO abductions are the same thing. Do you think that?
I think in a lot of ways it can be. I think the fae or fairy can be a broad term, and pretty much anything that's alien to us, it might not be from another planet. It could be from another dimension. So I think it does go into the same category.
Yeah, that's interesting because I had interviewed someone and they felt like fairies were earthbound spirits and aliens were not. They were something else. But there's a lot of people who kind of wrap, they like this sort of theory of everything's like, I don't know, a unified theory, I guess, of the paranormal, where all the paranormal experiences we're having is all the same thing. It's like human manifestation or something like that. And I don't know. I always saw fairies as more earthy. I don't know why. Maybe it's the movies. I don't know.
It could be. I mean, I might see it differently just because of the five elementals. So because of that, I see fairies as being earth, spirit, water, air, and also fire.
Right. So an elemental, when you say that, do you mean like an elemental, like as in a creature, like an Irish lord? Do you mean elemental as in like the earth elements of the earth?
It was, at least in mine, elementals are a creature that embodies that element of that makes up the universe, that there are millions of elements that make up the universe, but the powers will let these first five ones be created. And then they kind of got mad because they saw Spirit of Sante slipped the light into one of them to protect it. And they were like, okay, no more. But he found a way to start creating more anyway. So chaos is an element of the universe, empathy, compassion. Mm-hmm. And so there are different fae under, I believe, all of those different elements.
That's really interesting. Now, you were talking about that you liked Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and you have a vampire series. So do you want to get into talking about vampires and what is so cool about vampires?
I'm not sure where my original obsession with vampires came from. I think probably seeing the Hammer movies way too young, because my dad and my mom were both obsessed with monster movies. So I saw a lot of them way too young, and I liked the idea of vampires, but as I grew older, there's Buffy, there's True Blood, there's Vampire Diaries, and I got sucked into all of them. My particular series, though, there are Earth vampires, which are the living dead, and they are the technical vampires that we see. But there's also fairy vampires. And what they are is they're descendants of a bat dragon. So they have more to do with gargoyles and dragons. So they turn to stone in the sun.
Right.
There are daywalkers. They don't need blood to survive. They will need to drink blood to heal. And they can heal other people through their blood because it detoxifies them. But they don't drink blood to survive. And they are living.
Well, that's interesting because, like, originally, when you go back, I don't know, like 100, 150 years, you see, you know, Bram Stoker or other people write about vampires. Even, you can even see this in Hammer Horror. It's a very religious and Christian orientated. So it's a lot different because it's like vanquishing evil mm-hmm. under the church or whatnot. And so, but you're almost creating a world of just beings with different categories that ignores that whole sort of archetype.
Oh yeah, you could throw holy water on one of my vampires or hold a cross up to them and they're just going to look at you like you're crazy. It's going to have no effect on them at all because they're not evil.
Right, they're just another creature. Kind of reminds me, like, oh, what was that movie with Will Smith? I Am Legend? And have, like, an alternate ending where the zombie creatures aren't really the evil ones or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. But it's, like, kind of flipping it on its lid where they are... Well, I mean, you kind of get into that in, like the Gary Oldman Dracula where he's not... There's still a Christian element, but he's more like a fallen angel than this evil, you know, thing that needs to be vanquished. So you kind of slowly get into elements where the vampire is not just pure evil through the century.
Absolutely.
But yours is like, yeah, it's old. Oh,
hi, Dad.
Ed's in the room. we're going to get to the paranormal because I know you like ghost hunting and stuff, but... we'll get there, but I was a big vampire fan when I was in my teenage years. The first vampire, I'm going to be honest, the first vampire probably I've seen was Count Von Count. It's okay. Sesame Street. But, like, when I'm four. But I was a big fan of the Gary Oldman, the Francis Ford Coppola version, and I was a massive fan of Interview with the Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And all the books and... That sort of, it was like, it was different. It was like, you know, Creole Louisiana, and it just had a different flavor to it. And, but I really did love Hammer Horror as well. And I was big into Dracula and that, I guess I was really into the Christian element of it. And oh, he's a little like, your dad's Barnabas Collins, Dark
My
Shadows.
My dad's Barnabas Collins obsessed.
Yeah, well, Barnabas is like the same. He's like the vampire that turns into like sort of an anti-hero kind of
mm-hmm.
figure because he was so popular.
He's the Deadpool of vampires.
yeah, really. I mean, he becomes like this sort of anti-hero where he wants to be human. It's almost like a curse. But so are your vampires. They're not cursed.
No, well, they're cursed by the evil creatures against the daylight. Because they didn't normally turn to stone. But that was a punishment that was done to them that they're working on reversing. But other than that, they're not cursed at all.
That's different. Oh, I never watched the True Blood series. What was the arc on that? I never got into that.
Oh, that was such a good series, too. It's all about a girl who is telepathic. And she lives in a small town and a vampire comes in. She can't hear the thoughts of the vampire. So she becomes kind of obsessed with them. She does find out later in the series that the reason she's telepathic is because she's part fairy.
Wow. Okay. So they're kind of mixing and matching.
Oh yeah. They have fairies, vampires, werewolves. They do pretty much all of it on True Blood. It's a really good show. And you got Alexander Skarsgård in it. So you can't lose.
I canceled my TV and I became like a not TV person. And I think I just missed, I think my mother might've been into the True Blood and the books. And I think I probably just moved into some other interests outside of them. And I was raising a kid. So I was probably, let's be honest, I was probably watching The Backyardigans or Sesame Street or Barney or something like that.
Yep, that'll do it.
Hey, you could do like Barney the Vampire.
Oh yeah, that would work.
There is Barney the Vampire. Actually, there is a book, there was a play called Barney the Vampire that came before Dracula, actually.
You know, saying that, I think I know where my vampire obsession comes from now. I was little, I was obsessed with Benicula, the vampire rabbit series.
I never saw it.
It's a book series by James Howe, and it's a family that they go to a Dracula movie and they find a shoebox with a rabbit in it, and they bring him home. They name him Benicula, and then they start to notice that all the vegetables in the house have turned white. He sucks the juice out of the vegetables. It was an adorable series for kids.
That's cute. I always liked how they kind of did the Count, Von Count in Sesame Street. He's fun. He's educating you.
Yes, he is.
Your dad says Barnabas Collins is the reluctant vampire.
This is true. There are a lot of reluctant vampires. Just about every show has at least one that self hates because of the fact that they're a vampire. It's Bill Compton in True Blood. It's Angel in Buffy. And on The Vampire Diaries, it's Stephen Salvatore.
Yep. And now, is there a fascination with your characters? Like, did you have a fascination with this sort of idea of immortality and staying forever young?
Not really.
No?
And that's what surprises me about it, because the Fae, they don't age past the age of, like, 27. So all of them look like they're in their 20s, even if they're thousands of years old. Twilight. I never thought I was going to be a Twilight fan, but I was the children's storyteller and events coordinator for Borders Bookstore. And when the last Twilight book came out, they told me I was going to have to run an event for it because it was a midnight release. And they're like, oh, you got to do Q&A about all three of the original books. So I was like, okay, do you have questions? No, they didn't have any questions for me. So I had one weekend to read all three books and write my own questions to run this event. And that's the only reason I even knew about Twilight. Wow. It's not bad, though. I liked the movies were good.
I watched the first movie, I think, and then that was it for me.
The last one was really good.
Wow. So in the 80s, I think, I was trying to think of 80s movies, vampire movies, and I think my favorite one is The Lost Boys.
Lost Boys is really, really good. I'm also a huge fan of Near Dark. It has half the cast of aliens in it.
It was right around the same time that kind of rough vampire. Although Lost Boys is a little more teeny bopper, but it's still pretty. You get some pretty graphic scenes. You get some pretty graphic scenes for the youth, and it was always my favorite. That one and the movie Fright Night.
Oh, I love Fright Night. The original and the remake.
Jerry Dandridge. And I love Roddy McDowell. He does some good horror.
Yes, he does.
He was in, there's this movie I have with him. It's like a haunted house one. Hell House or something like that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's a 70s movie. And then he was in one of my favorite episodes on the Night Gallery called The Cemetery. It's the first pilot episode they did of that TV series. And it was a late 60s, early 70s TV show with Rod Serling. And he does the pilot one, and it's spooky. It scares me. Mark Eddy said it was the Legend of Hell House that Roddy McDowell was in. And it's all about this demonic, evil entity house. And yeah, so other people, like your dad saying Salem's Lot.
Yes, I'm a huge Stephen King fan.
Was Salem's Lot the only one that he wrote with vampires in it? I can't remember.
No, he wrote one called The Night Flyer that also dealt with vampires. It was a vampire that had his own little airplane. And he goes into an airport one night and just like slaughters everybody.
Well, I'm glad I wasn't in
Monster Squad. That was one of my favorite movies as a kid. Oh, I had such a crush on Ryan Lambert because he used to be on Kids Incorporated.
Yeah.
He's the tough kid with the bike that smokes cigarettes. Oh, I loved him.
Yep. So my son, every time I try to say, hey, there's this movie from my childhood I want you to watch, he's like, when he was little, like, it's going to suck because it's from the 80s. It can't be cool. And I said, no, you got to watch Monster Squad. And he was like, whatever. And I put it on and he absolutely loved it. I said, I told you you were going to love it because it was boys right around his age that are like hunting these monsters. And he couldn't stop it. He thought Back to the Future was going to be lame. And I'm like, no, trust me, son. it's a classic. You'll love it. And he loves it. So I convinced my son to that Monster Squad was a good movie. And it's fun for little kids.
Oh, absolutely it is.
And I don't know. I thought their Dracula was spot on, totally universal.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think I still quote that movie today.
Wolfman's got nards.
Yep.
that was the quote that we would always go to school saying and making fun of was Wolfman's got nards.
Yep, absolutely.
So, like, your figures, does any of that classic universal Dracula, is there any character that's any aristocratic in any of your books? Do you, like, have a figure, an archetype like that?
Not really, no. A majority of my characters bounce back and forth between the Fae world and our world, the few that can get in. And none of them are really aristocratic. They don't like, I don't know how to phrase it. They don't really care about money or society at all.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there are quite a few of them that get roped into having to live in society and apply to the rituals, especially the time drifters. Takes place in the 1700s in Scotland, and a lot of them are forced to go to all the socialite parties and everything, and they just absolutely hate it. It's not something that the Fae in my series really like at all.
Interesting, because that's the whole, I think, well, I mean, part of Dracula is very historical. Like when Bram Stoker is writing it, he's going back maybe partially, intentional, and maybe just by fluke, he taps into that Vlad the Impaler, mm-hmm. who is, and oh my God, what's his name? King Charles, the current royal family is related to them, and
mm-hmm.
they're all vampires, man. That's why people come up with this Illuminati stuff.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with Emily on both 28 Days of Night and Midnight Mass. They were both awesome.
I've never seen either of these. 28 Days of Night.
Yep, that it's a vampire film in Alaska. So when they hit the, it's 30 Days of Night.
Yeah.
As soon as they hit the darkness, all these vampires come into town, and the town's kind of screwed at that point because
right.
the sun's not going to rise for a month.
Yeah, well, when you have winter up north,
mm-hmm.
it's dark, but for a little tiny period of sliver of time. So, but then if you have summer, it's ideal because there's...
That's true.
you got this total flip-floppy. Okay, so... Are you working on any books currently that haven't come out yet? Like, are you moving somewhere with the Fae and with the vampires?
For example, the Night Stalker Chronicles is my first one in this Saints of Fae series that I started. Started it all the way back in the 90s. And there's 13 books in the series. 9 of them are out on Amazon right now. 10, 11, and 12, I've already finished writing. I'm just doing the editing right now, but I'm currently working on the 13th and final book in that series. But I'm also writing the third in the timeline series. And I'm six chapters away from finishing a short novella called Cotton Candy and Fireworks.
What is that about?
Angels. But they are also Fae. They're my Fae angels are descended from an albino phoenix.
Interesting. That's very clever. That actually makes sense. An albino phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at biblical stuff and people don't realize, like, how we think of angels, that is not how they describe them in the Bible.
No, not at all.
They are very, and now we all know why when the angels appear to human beings, they tell them to not fear. Because they're like eyeballs everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. The numerous eyeballs and the wings. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, they're not human looking. Well, most of them aren't. Or you'll get like, I don't know, is it the cherubim? They've got like a goat's head, a lion's head. Yes. They've got like 3 or 4 heads on them. That would be enough to scare the bejesus out of any human.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you have any figures that are kind of borrow from some biblical archetypes at all?
No. Despite the fact that I grew up in the church with my dad being a minister, no, not at all.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is interesting. Now, I want to kind of get, because we were talking paranormal before I came on, and you, not only do you write and you have all these books, which I'm encouraging everybody to go onto Amazon and Google Dark A Shade, but you've been into paranormal hunting and ghost yes. hunting. Okay. I know you've been heavily, probably that's been around your whole life, right?
Yes. And I did grow up in a haunted house in Pennsylvania.
Okay. What was that like?
That was terrifying because a majority of the activity took place on the third floor and my bedroom door was directly across from the third floor door.
Did you ever visually see anything in the house or was...
Yes. I don't know if my dad remembers this, but there was one night that I woke up and there was an old woman sitting at the foot of my bed and she was just kind of rubbing the blanket and she was humming to me. And I freaked out and screamed and ran into their room crying about it. And my brother always kind of made fun of me for it. And then we were living together, I want to say in the late 90s. And we were just sitting around drinking one night. And I started telling him about seeing her that night. And the more I was talking and describing her, the whiter he started becoming. He just went completely pale. And that's when he confided in me that he had seen her once too. And my description matched his completely. We always called her Mrs. Argo. I'm not sure what her real name was, but it's what we always called her.
So you said it was frightening. Did she have like a bad feel to her or?
No, not at all. But I was about 8 or 9 years old. So that was a little too much for right. me to take at that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. So that, I mean, I was going to say, because I know your dad did a lot of work with the Warrens. We don't have to get into anything about the Warrens. Your dad worked with the Warrens. So I wonder, was that at the time or was that after when, like, or was he doing all that work at the same time that you guys had a haunted house? Like, did that coincide?
I think he did a majority of the work in Connecticut when we lived there when we were very small.
Okay.
And okay. I was probably about 5 when we moved to Pennsylvania.
Okay,
so I know he was still in contact with them, but I don't know if he was still investigating with them at the time.
Right. And so what, I mean, because it can be frightening when you're a kid, because I lived in a haunted house when I was about 6 or 7 on the East Coast, and I was a little more brave than the other kids that lived with us, but it can be really scary when you hear stuff or see stuff or something happens and you don't understand it or you're by yourself. So what, you say you were afraid at first, but what prompted you to actually take an interest in it and not be afraid?
Probably the comic books and books and movies that I was watching at that time, because I was very into Casper the Friendly Ghost. So at that point I was like, oh, well, maybe it's just a friendly ghost. So I started talking mm-hmm. to her and spent like daring myself to go up to the third floor by myself. And after 76 to 79. So yes, it was definitely after that then, because okay. I was born in 75.
Right. Gen X?
Yes, I am a Gen X.
Rockin'. Me too. Rock on. Rock on, Gen X.
That's right.
But no, yeah, so you were watching, so basically a lot of media was sort of helping you realize that these could be better spirits and to take an interest in them.
Oh, absolutely. Especially since Scooby-Doo, they were always telling you, well, you know, could be somebody in a mask. So at that point, I think that's when I started getting the investigation bug. But I didn't actually really get fully into it until, I want to say 2001. It's when I started the Green Monkey Paranormal Society.
The Green Monkey
Paranormal Society.
That's cool. Okay. But a lot of stuff was happening. Like, I know I was always interested in ghosts and I'm more like collecting the stories and folklore, but there was a bunch of shows that came on, like Most Haunted or Ghost mm-hmm. Hunters. And I think that really spurred on a lot of ghost hunting as almost like a business or tourism.
Yes.
And so you see people saying, it's almost like the society saying, okay, it's okay to do this now. You don't have to like pretend or be embarrassed mm-hmm. about it. almost. I don't know. Some people still think it's ridiculous, but we're going on one this weekend, and I just think it's, I always look at ghosts more of a, almost like a history, like I'm doing mm-hmm. history research than anything else.
Oh, absolutely.
And so are you ever going to write anything like in novels, like a ghost series, or do ghosts appear in your books?
Yes. Quite a bit. I actually do have a standalone novella called, I'm going to forget the name of it. Echo Within. And Echo Within is the story of a boy who lives in a town where there's this huge haunted house that was owned by a doctor who experimented on his patients and they believe did satanic rituals. And the boy is about 12 years old and he's going on a tour of this haunted house on Halloween with his parents. And he disappears. He gets sucked into a mirror. And they can't find him for a good 4 or 5 hours. And when they do find him, he just can't stop screaming. Poor kid ends up in a mental hospital for about 12 years with these severe hallucinations. And he actually begins to manifest them. And then the doctor sends him home, which he lives right down the street from the haunted house, as a way to be a therapy for him. And there's a group of kids that like to scare people, and they make it kind of their mission to get him back in the house and scare him enough to send him back to the mental hospital. But they don't realize that the ghosts are real and they very much want this kid.
Interesting. Because, you hear like that kind of, okay, we're doing a show on clowns on Thursday, mm-hmm. Clowns and Nephilim, but one of the scariest movies, and I always forget about this one, Poltergeist.
Oh, yes.
Kind of similar.
That was one of my favorites as a kid.
But that's probably one of the movies is why I really didn't like clowns.
My brother was the same way. That clown freaked him out.
Yeah.
That and when the tree ate the kid.
Well, I had a massive, my grandfather had a massive Raggedy Ann clown doll homemade for me. It was tall. It was like at least 5 feet tall. It was this huge clown doll. And I had that made for me, and then I saw that movie, and I was like, oh my God. I couldn't.
My grandmother had a life-sized Little Orphan Annie doll in her basement, and that used to freak me out, because I always pictured that was going to come to life.
Yeah, but dolls are creepy. My grandma.
Oh, yes.
My grandmother collected dolls. They were everywhere. Porcelain dolls. That was big in the 80s, but she had dolls everywhere, and it was always creepy.
Yeah, I never wanted dolls. I always wanted stuffed animals. I actually got upset at first when my mom got me a Cabbage Patch Kid because I was like, I don't want a doll.
I didn't mind like a baby doll, but those porcelain dolls. And she would collect them from, and she would get old ones that were like mutated, short arms, weird, 150 years old from Germany. Someone would give it to her and it wasn't like normal proportions or its head would be all weird. And she'd have all these dolls everywhere. And I would go, even as an adult, when I would go to visit her and I'd be sleeping in the spare, her little room in the back, I would just be looking around. I'm like, oh, do you have to? And then she had this alarm clock. It was old style where you had to wind it up and you'd be sleeping and you'd be laying there and there's all these dolls and you could hear her clock go tick, 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 tick.
Oh, yeah,
and I'm just
creepy.
Like, you got to turn that clock off. And I'm going to have to take some of these dolls out of the room because they're starting to like freak me out. It's like they're watching me while I'm sleeping. But she absolutely loved them and she couldn't understand why I thought they were so creepy, but they are.
Yes, they are.
You can write a horror book on dolls.
Oh yeah, I completely should.
Yeah, I mean they're just so super creepy. Now, I mean, I'm jumping around here, sorry everyone, but I was gonna ask, get back to you, because we kind of jutted into ghosts and books, but we were talking about ghost hunting, and I wanted to know if you have any experience in your ghost hunting that was like confirmed that paranormal is real. If you have like one case where it was like totally validated the proof of some sort of afterlife or the beyond?
Not really, because I mean, we've even collected some really, really good EVPs. And I think the closest we came to is we were doing this woman's house I lived in Massachusetts at the time, right in the Bridgewater Triangle, which is the largest paranormal hotspot within the United States. And we came over to this woman's house. We were taking pictures in her basement because she said she kept seeing faces in the panels. And we took this one picture of an orb that we saw. And when the picture came out, you could actually see what looked like a pirate. You could see his clothing. It looked like he was shackled to the wall. He had the pirate's hat on. Or like, this is massive. We're nowhere near Salem or any place where there's even a port. So we brought it over to her and we were asking her, is there any way that pirates could be associated with the house? Well, it turned out her great-great-grandfather was a rum runner. And there were actual pictures of him down in these books in the basement of him with pirates. And we had no idea. So that was probably the closest that we came to, because we had no idea the pirates were involved until we got that picture.
Well, that's really fascinating. That is, well, I mean, and why would you think that? I mean, you would never know that she had a father who was a rum runner who was tied into pirates. And I mean, God, that must have been relatively recent. Like her grandfather, like, I guess pirates were around longer than I thought. I always think like 16 and 17 and 1800s for some reason.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think it was her great-great-grandfather. Okay. But it was her grandfather's house, so all the stuff that he had from his family was all in the basement.
Wow, that's really interesting. So, and you captured it?
Okay. We actually captured a picture of it.
Wow.
Yeah, you could see the orb, and then you could see the manifestation coming right behind the orb. It almost looks like it's coming out of it.
Have you? What do you think about demons? Because there's a lot of people, to them, everything's demons. Do you think there's such a thing as demons?
In a way, I get really upset actually when people are like, oh, everything's demonic. Poltergeist activity is demonic. Well, you've seen a 2-year-old throw a tantrum before. Mm-hmm. Well, if a 2-year-old doesn't have a body, what else is their tantrum going to look like other than the poltergeist activity? And a lot of times poltergeists ended up being adolescents that weren't even dead. They weren't even ghosts. They were just had all this energy and emotions that they didn't know what to do with. And they bottled it up and it would end up manifesting itself in this poltergeist activity. When it comes to the demonic, though, I think a lot of times they have to remember that it takes a lot for spirits to be able to communicate. So if you tell them to move something and you hear a bang, oh, that's demonic. Well, no, it's not. You just asked it to communicate. It's difficult for it to do so.
Right, right.
I do think that there are some spirits that are angry. And I think that anger can come across a lot of times as demonic.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the demonic itself, I'm pagan, so I have a lot of trouble really diving into demonic.
Right. Well, that's fair enough. I don't think everything's demons, but I certainly think there's definitely low vibration things out there that when you feel them in the room, if you're experiencing them, it does not feel good if you are not, you know, if you're... It can feel really depressing when you contrast it with your own energy. Mm-hmm. It can feel really negative and overwhelming. And I mean, if you are somebody who's just all logical and the solid is the solid and you're in the material and you're in some house and something starts throwing something at you or you end up with scratches or welts on your body, I can understand how that would be really frightening and intimidating. Absolutely. I've never seen... a ghost or had anything attack me or anything like that, but I have had heard footsteps and well, I shouldn't say I've never seen. I was in a old hotel one time and I woke up and there was a shadow figure standing over me, but I thought at the time that I might have been having like a sleep paralysis. But I don't doubt that sleep paralysis can actually be something more than just sleep paralysis. Like it could be really some kind of spooky, shadowy figure.
That's why they used to call it the old hag syndrome.
Yeah, have you ever had that experience? Like when you're doing, because I find like the more I get into doing investigations, the more likely that's to happen at home.
I've never had that particular experience, but I have had the one where, I don't know if anyone else has had this, you're laying down to go to sleep and you're just about there and you hear somebody yell something next to you, but you can't understand what it is that they're saying, and you jump and there's nobody there.
My stepsister had that, but she wasn't asleep. She was in England. She was working there on a student visa, and she was in friends she met in Australia. They let her stay at their place in England because they were from England. And she always was spooked out about this house in the hallway. And she wasn't really a believer. I used to tell her ghost stories and she thought I was nuts. And one night she came down to have a drink of water. And she was standing at the fridge and she was getting some water and she was standing there and all of a sudden she felt like someone walked right up close to her and they went, it's almost like they said shh in her ear and then tried to say something else. Wow. But it came across as like radio garbled voice. Mm-hmm. She couldn't hear it. And she said all the hairs on the back of her neck, like she slammed her cup down and she ran and hid in her room and she just wanted to get out of there. And she didn't want to say anything, but she finally told them what happened to her and they said, oh, that's our grandma. There was like two adjoining properties and I guess she was staying in the one that the grandmother used to live in. And she's like, yeah, that was her grandmother. Oh, wow. She was probably mad because you were standing with the fridge open. They told her. And so she had that, but she wasn't asleep. But it was like, right in her ear. And she said, I just about jumped out of my skin. It frightened me so bad. And she became a believer. She became a believer. And then, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I look at it this way too, is if you get a bad vibe from somebody that you're in the room with, mm-hmm. imagine if they don't have a body to hold all that energy in. That vibe is going to be 10 times worse if they're a spirit.
Yeah.
So I think that's a lot of times where we get that bad vibe. So that it wasn't a good person in life. And now that they don't have anything to contain all that energy in, you're going to feel it 10 times more.
Yeah, it's true. And I also think that there's also some sort of symbiotic thing going on with, like, they're actually, the more they can actually get their energy from feeding off of your feelings and emotion. It kind of supercharges things. Mm-hmm. And you can be projecting stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, they have scientifically proven that there are people that they call psychic vampires because they feed off of your energy to keep their energy plenished.
Yeah.
I've seen some great documentaries where they actually will show the colors in the energy of the person being very diminished. And yours is very bright. And then with them being around you for about 10 minutes, yours will start to diminish and theirs will start to get brighter.
I know people where I'm around them. And after a while, I'm like, you need to go away from me.
They just suck the life right out of you.
I'm an introvert. And so I need to be by myself to recharge. And if I'm around someone too long and they're like that, I'm going to be totally exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Like totally 100% exhausted. I just won't be able to even withstand it. I'll be like, ugh. And I have been a manager, supervisor, and I've worked with people, and I've come in the room and I'm like, oh God, that person's on shift today. I'm going to be exhausted within an hour and a half with this person. And then there's other people, they come in and it's all like, woo, it's great. And I mean, yeah,
yep.
It's true. It's totally true. It's creepy. So that, if that happens live, I guess it can happen on a paranormal sort of.
Oh, absolutely. Because now they don't have a body to contain that in anymore. So it's just free reign.
Yeah, it is. And zapping everywhere. And I'm wondering, like, when I say this to people who are religious, and we do have a lot of conservative people on X, they say, like, in Christianity, their idea is it's impossible to have ghosts because God would never allow that. But I'm like, well, I don't know. I've experienced some strange things. Like, I've had my cat, after we had to put her down when she was 19, she came back and walked on my head while I was in bed. So I'm like, well then what's going on? You know?
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Like, I don't know. I just think something is happening, and I don't know that everything that it always explains all of it.
I don't think anything's ever going to explain all of it.
No. And that's the whole funness of doing these shows and talking about it.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Okay, so we're coming to the end of the hour. What? So Emily reminded us that Jesus came back in spirit to talk to disciples, so they must be able to. There you go. All right, so I've got a couple of messages coming in here. I'm going to have a little boo. Someone just told me I look like Ally Sheedy. I never saw that. So someone one time told me I look like Sandra Bullock. Has anybody ever told you you look like somebody? I didn't see it, but someone told me I look like Sandra Bullock. I'm like, oh, thanks, but I don't see it. I just think I look like me.
Well, somebody once when I was younger told me I looked like Demi Moore, and I was like, yeah, no, you're crazy.
They must have had lots of plastic surgery because she still looks freaking fantastic. They've had to have lots of work done. It's not fair. Breakfast Club. Okay, so future, do you have any stuff on the go or on the plan in terms of your paranormal group? Do you have anything that you want to do, or the like your fantasy location, you know, that you would love to go to if cost wasn't an element?
I definitely would love to go to Scotland. There's a couple of different prisons and monasteries there that I would love to check out. What I'd also love to do is, now that we're living here in Vermont, because we've only been here for about 3 years now, there's a castle here that you can rent for ghost hunts that's highly haunted. There's abandoned villages and castles. So far, we've only been to one place called Emily's Bridge. So since we've spent so much time investigating Massachusetts and Rhode Island, I'd really love to dive into what Vermont and Canada has to offer.
Interesting. My stepsister was also, because you say Scotland, my stepsister stayed in Edinburgh for 6 months.
Oh, nice.
And one of the places I always wanted to go there is the underground vaults that they have. They have like a total underground city, and they do tours. Mm-hmm. And I believe like people died of the plague in there. And at one time there was probably like people living under there, but they built all up over that, and the modern city sits on top of this older city, and apparently it's quite haunted. And my stepsister told me, she's like, if you go to, you know, go to Edinburgh, she's like, it was the spookiest city. She's like, it's so old, and it was totally definitely creepy and haunted. So
yeah, I'd definitely love to check that out. I also would love to go to Culloden Battlefield, because I would imagine that, because we got Gettysburg here that has a lot of activity, Culloden's got to have tons. I mean, a majority of the Highlanders were just wiped out in that battle.
Yeah, no doubt. There's like, well, they have so much folklore, and they have so much history. They have, you know, Celtic, they have Druid history, they've got Roman, they got the Saxons, they've just got all these layers and invaders and all this stuff mm-hmm. happening. And then the Normans, and they've got their own battles with their smaller kingdoms. And it's just so, it's hard, and it's in such a small landmass. You know, everything is like when you go there and they say, oh, it's a long drive, they think an hour or two is a long drive. And we're over here like, an hour or two is not a long drive in America. Like 12 hours is a long drive in America, you know?
Yeah,
you know,
'cause exactly.
We're so vast, but they have so much history layered in such a small area. It's no wonder it's known for being superbly haunted over there.
Oh, absolutely.
Have you ever been over in anywhere in Europe?
No, unfortunately not. I've never actually been out of the country except I think I went camping in Canada when I was a kid, but other than that, no, I've never been anywhere out of the country.
I was over in London in 2012, and it was pretty fantastic. Then we went over to Paris. I didn't have any paranormal experience, although my friend's house that I was staying at, I felt like this place was haunted, and she said, yeah, she thought it was, but I didn't have an experience. I just had this feeling that there was something around, but I never actually had experience. But I mean, it was I'm looking around going, wow, this is so old. Like I'm in a pub that was built in 1200. It was crazy. It was fantastic. So if you ever get a chance, definitely go to Scotland. 100%.
Yeah, I definitely want
to. You need to win that lottery.
I would love to go to Romania as well. I'd love to check out the Black Forest. That's one of the most haunted areas.
Yeah.
And it's right at the foot of the Carpathian Mountains.
That is such an interesting area. My father's from Eastern Europe. I'm half Eastern European. So I always wanted to go to, because he's from Croatia and then Romania area. I always want to go there. But we'll see how events in the world pan out. It's a little bit crazy right now. out there.
Yeah, true.
It's a little bit crazy. All right. So where can people find you? Do you have a website or anything?
I don't have one at the moment. Right now I'm working everything off of my Facebook group, okay, which is just Saints of Fae, Dark A Shade.
All right. I'm going to pop that up if you guys want to join.
And I do have some great AI character pictures on there, too, of all my characters.
That's right. It's the number there, Facebook group. I believe I've popped it in the conversation. You'll only be able to see it on YouTube and Facebook, but it's facebook.com/group/7964730854972166. It's a big long number, but I'll leave it up there for a little bit if you guys want to check it out. Or you can, I just typed in Dark A Shade and I was able to find it pretty quickly on Facebook. So that is,
yep. I have an account under Dark A Shade too. So feel free to send me a friend request. Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. So any last words about writing or ghosts or any kind of meaning in life before we sign out?
The best thing that I can offer is never, always expect the unexpected and then inspect it. Never be surprised, and nothing's impossible.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show, and it was a unique conversation. You're always welcome back if you have other books you want to pitch or show or talk about or any new projects. You're always welcome back on the show.
Well, right. Thank you. Thank you so much for having
me. I'm just going to put you in the green room and I'll be right there. Just one moment. All right, everybody, you see that Dark A Shade down at the bottom. You can search that out on Facebook. Also search that out on Amazon if you're interested in her novel series. She's got several of them on Amazon. Please remember to support my guests by going and subscribing to their stuff. It's something you are interested in. And so show up tomorrow. I'm going to be here on Gen X News. I'm going to talk in some politics. I'll decide the stories. You guys always know I usually have some TikTok videos and interesting stuff to talk about. Thursday, I'm doing Mika Dank. He's coming back. He's talking part two. He was talking about his biblical decoding that he's done in reference to constellations and the astrology and all that stuff. He's going to come on for part two of his presentation, and that's going to be at 6 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. And then I'm going to do a second show with Emily. She's in the chat right now. We're going to be talking about the Nephilim and clowns. Are they linked? What's going on? We've got some really interesting stuff that we've found out and researched, and you know, we're going to think Wayne Gacy and weird clowns and Ronald McDonald. I mean, think of all the clowns everywhere and how creepy they are. Just think about that. And the Nephilim. We'll tie it all in. And that is at 10 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. And Friday, we got Tim Foyle Hat Friday. I think we're going to be talking about time traveling and Donald Trump. I think we're going to talk about a little bit of quantum physics and weird stuff on Friday. I think we're going to go there. We were supposed to do it last Friday, but it was my birthday, so I had to cancel. We're going to revisit that on Friday. So I want to thank everybody for joining the show. I really appreciate you guys. Remember, share, subscribe on the channel, repost, thumbs up, give it hearts, help support the show. And if you're listening to this on the audio podcast, which I will upload later, 5 stars, it helps us show up. I'm going to hit the road, and I hope you guys have a wonderful evening. Thank you very much.